that I felt so all alone, that I never thought that someday I would have a happy home. A family and a four-track Radio Shack microphones, a backyard and a hammock and a paid-off student loan. A backyard and a hammock and a paid-off student loan. So if you...
Hey there, welcome to the Dental Practice Fixers Podcast. I am your host, Dr. David Maddow. Welcome you back. Before I bring in my co-host, Dr. Richard Maddow, I just want to say again, we always start off just with a few seconds, and we really mean this from our hearts. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for being a subscriber. And if you get a couple seconds, and if you really like what you're hearing here, it really will help us if you just go into iTunes, give us a quick, honest review, like the show, talk about just a little bit about what you think of it, because iTunes really does see that, and they will elevate our status and will become more popular. Not that we're not popular now. We're growing every single time we put an episode out, but it really does help. So if you could do us a favor, it only takes a second, just go into iTunes and give us a good review. And I should say a good, honest review. If you don't like it, say you don't like it. It's okay. We've had great reviews so far, so whatever happens, happens. But do the best you can. And right now I'm going to bring in my co-host, my brother, business partner, and confidant, and all those things combined, Dr. Richard Maddow.
Hey, everybody out there in Dental Practice Fixers podcast land. Great to be with you today for episode number 20. Dave, something we just saw recently.
Yeah.
And I don't know who what this was, but
I don't know.
Somebody racked us in the top five best dental podcasts. It was on some. It
you
was
showed
on a website.
Me the article.
Yeah, it was really
yes,
cool. That. I can't remember.
What
I was
what's
just Googling,
the URL.
Well,
of that
I Googled.
Again?
I Googled. Like what are the best dental podcasts or something like that, and this article came up. So it
yeah.
was very flattering in our first year.
I
season
know.
One.
I can't remember how many were. Was it? Was it?
I think
five
it was five.
Or six
five
or six.
Or
like
but
yeah,
we were great company. A lot of very well known dental
yeah.
podcasts were on there, and us.
If we remember the URL of that thing, we give it out. But I can't remember what
maybe
it was.
Maybe during the show, one of us could look it up and find it. We'll give it towards the end.
That's a good idea.
Okay, let's do it. So hey, I'm going to give you your tip of the day today. It's a fast, down and dirty, easy tip, but just like any other tip of the day, it's only going to work if you do it. So you got to do it. We read a study not that long ago talking about how to increase the average value of every patient in your practice. And here's something they learned. That is, you can increase your practice revenue or the average value of every patient by 10% just by looking every patient in the eye and saying seven words to them. Now, the seven words are not something like, it's time you pay me the money you owe. I don't know how many words that is. But
that might have been more insane. I don't
probably.
Even know. I can't count.
But remember, let's just say you have a $750,000 practice, and all you do is look every patient in the eye and say these seven words, your practice goes up by $75,000 in 1 year, mostly profit. What are the words? You look every single patient in the eye and just say, would you like to have whiter teeth? Or you can, you know, we've heard people say things like, are you happy with the color of your teeth? Anything like that. But you've got to ask, would you like to have whiter teeth? Most people will say no. Many will say yes. And then you tell them about the great ways you can whiten their teeth. And of course, as we know, when people get their teeth whitened, two things happen. One, they're more prone to get other cosmetic treatment or at least ask about other cosmetic treatment. And secondly, more importantly and more fun, they go around showing their bright white smile to everyone, telling them how great their dentist is. So this will work if you do it. Look every patient in the eye and say, would you like to have whiter teeth? After all, that's why they're there. So give it a try. We know it works.
It's a great tip. And by the way, when you do that, you'll find you'll have a lot of good whitening and cosmetic cases. And remember, I can't remember what episode it was, but it was a few episodes back. We shared with you how to get fantastic video testimonials all day long. So go back and check that episode, because if you're doing what Rich just said, you are going to get a lot of these, what we call aha moments, people saying that, wow, my smile never looked this good, or I'm so happy with this office, whatever it might be. So go back and listen to that episode and find out how you get tons of video testimonials.
As you can
share
see,
on social media,
all of the episodes of the Dental Practice Fixers work in concert, in tangenti, in
tangenti
together. Ooh. In tangenti together. So go back and listen to some old episodes if you haven't.
It's like a big piece of a puzzle.
Exactly.
Wasn't that like a newsletter?
The $1 million puzzle.
Yeah, wasn't that like a newsletter? And like every issue was like something like piece number 771 of the $1 million puzzle.
Yeah, piece number million of the million. Each one was worth a dollar. And you were waiting for them to get to piece number million. But I don't
whatever
think
happened?
Did
they ever get to piece number million?
I don't think they ever did.
What happened with that?
I think like most dental newsletters, they stopped publication before they finished out. Or was it, the $1 million pie, the $1 million puzzle? It was something like that. Hey, anyway, let's get to our topic today. What do you say?
Rich, I'm going to start. I've got an article. It's really, really brief. I want to read it. And it's going to get us going in some direction. It's really pretty cool.
It's going
cool.
to stimulate some conversation.
I think, I hope it does, or else it's going to be the world's shortest podcast, the world's shortest dental podcast
too late
episode.
For that.
But Rich, I found this in a newsletter. It's a financial newsletter that I think you probably get as well, but I don't know if you saw this article. It's very interesting. It caught my attention.
Let's hear it.
Well, here's what really got my attention. The headline, the title of the article is "Caution: Reading this might give you indigestion." So I got to read this article, see what this is all about. So it starts off by saying there's $1.5 trillion out there in student loan debt. And about a third is owed by 5.5% of the borrowers. I don't have to read that paragraph because it doesn't really, it's okay. But I'm going to get into the next part of it. It said a small group, 101 borrowers exactly, owe more than $1 million in student loans each. Over $1 million in student loans each. Now, they include Mike Meru. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's a 37-year-old. This comes right from this article. A 37-year-old orthodontist in Utah who owes, drumroll please, $1,060,945. It's according to a report in the Wall Street Journal.
How much does he owe? $1 million?
$1.06 million.
Wow.
$1,060,945. So basically $1.061 million. So it says Meru, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. It doesn't even matter. Meru pays only, I'm not sure how they got this information, but he only pays $1,590 per month, which is not enough to even cover the interest. So his debt from 7 years at the University of Southern California School of Dentistry grows by $130 every single day. In 20 years, his balance will be $2 million.
He's going up.
He's unlikely to ever repay this loan. Again, I'm reading this word for word.
So he's
going to
die owing the government. Is it the government that you owe when it's a student loan?
I believe it is. You know, I think it is government-backed. Millions of dollars. Now, here's the article continues. Well, this part, this is why I'm reading this on a dental podcast. Dental school is the nation's costliest higher education program. Private nonprofit dental schools during the 2015-2016 school year charged an average of, what do you think the average was, Rich?
Well, it says private nonprofit.
Private nonprofit.
I thought private dental schools were for profit. How can you be a private nonprofit dental school? It makes no sense, doesn't
it? Because haven't they opened up more recently? They opened up these pure like for profit.
Okay, so maybe
we'll just guess.
Maybe Temple's a private nonprofit dental school. Is that possible?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
I think
so. They want the yearly tuition or the yearly total expense?
Let's see. It would be the school year charge an average. It's just the tuition. Tuition, the school.
Because sometimes, they lump it all together. If they lump it all together, I'm going to say $72,000 per year.
Were you reading this?
No, I swear.
It's exactly.
Get out of here.
$71,820 per year.
Wow, that is uncanny. Now, I win a prize?
Yeah, I'm going to give it to you at the end of the show. I took that to mean school year charging. The school charges an average of that for tuition. That's not the
that could
the living
be
expenses.
Their equipment and
Okay. Equipment too. Yeah. Sure,
72K.
But the USC program, University of Southern California program, is one of the most expensive. What do you think that one is?
University of Spoiled Children. I would say all in $105,000.
I thought you'd get this close. See, you weren't even close on this one.
Okay.
$137,000 a year.
Holy moly.
That does say with living expenses included. It does okay.
Living in Southern California is not cheap.
It's still $137,000 a year. So the article goes on to say these are choices. We're not because I think they must have interviewed some people at these facilities saying, hey, this isn't fair. Right. So they're saying these are choices. We're not coercing anyone, says Avishai Sadan, dean of USC's dental school.
Baruch Hashem.
He says, you know exactly what you're getting into.
True.
Well, I don't know. Then the writer of the article says, really? Can it truly be said that inexperienced young people entering schools know exactly, quote, exactly what they're getting into when they take on such obligations? And then it says the article is finished by the writer saying, seems like a big assumption to me. I'll tell you, Rich, you know, when you're in your early 20s,
you're an adult, technically.
Okay, you're an adult for sure. You're an adult, granted. But you're making a lifelong decision. When you say, I want to be a dentist. Now, somebody in the early 20s, do they even know for sure that they're going to love dentistry? Let's be honest. They're going to know for sure.
For the most part, they have no idea.
No idea.
I mean, let's face it. We've been through this before. You don't know what you're getting into. I mean, you know that right. You love the idea right. of being a dentist. You right. know, you think for some reason it might be a great career for you. But you have no idea what you're getting into. Is there any way around that? How can you ever know? I'll tell you something, though. This generation of dental students, I know because my stepson is one, and I know a lot of dental students, and I know somebody right now who's going through the application process. They spend a lot of time shadowing. That wasn't even a term that existed in our day. They shadow in dental practices. They observe for long periods of time in dental practices, seeing exactly what it's like. When I applied to dental school, I think the most time I ever spent in a dental office was when Dr. Koppel did an occlusal amalgam on tooth number 30.
And he's like spreading his ashes all over your patient bib, too. Exactly. Like flicking his ashes.
I hope they just weren't a patient's ashes. But don't you feel the same way? I think this generation is a little more informed than we were.
I don't know. Maybe some people shadow, but so, Rich, there was one of our members in our Facebook group, The Dental Place. He's a young dental student, first year. I think he's going to dental school somewhere up in New York, maybe New York University or something like that. And he pretty much said he, by the time he finishes, he was kind of venting. He said, by the time, I don't know if you saw this, it was just from last night. He said, by the time he finishes dental school in New York, he's going to owe $500,000. And he went on to say he was kind of led on and didn't realize all this. And all of his friends and family members.
Led on by who?
Well, I'll tell you, he said all his friends and family members, seriously, you go back and read this. Friends and family members of his told him that, don't worry about it. You're going to be rich. You can pay these loans back very quickly and you're going to be a wealthy dentist. Well, it's like reality is setting in. He's reading all these other things about corporate dentistry and he's going to owe $500,000. He's really saying, if I would have known all this, I wouldn't have done it. I would have had another career choice.
I do feel sorry. I have empathy. I have sympathy, whatever the pathy is that I have for him. And I hate to see people in that situation, as you do too. But going in, he probably did, or certainly easily could have, figured out how much he will owe on the day he graduates, right? And no matter what his family says, he should know that he's sitting there looking at a debt of $500,000. And then, again, I know most 20, 22-year-olds don't have the foresight to do this, but got an estimates on the payback schedule and what they could expect to make as a dentist, all these things. Hopefully, this news will come out and it will become clear to potential dental students they need to take all this into consideration.
But when you're a kid, I think something resonates more with him by his family saying, oh, don't worry. You're going to be a dentist. You're going to be wealthy. Everybody does this. It's the way it's done these days. You can pay it back easily. Don't worry about a thing. Right. I think that takes over.
And then U.S. News and World Report comes out and says dentistry is the best profession in the country. They have high job satisfaction. They make a shitload of money. And I guess you see that and you think,
right,
I'll invest anything to become a dentist. What's my choice? I'm a third-year college student majoring in biology. What the hell am I going to do with my life?
Right? What the hell am I going to do? But here's the thing. I mean, I'm kind of chatting with this guy in the dental place, and I'm thinking to myself, like, suppose he doesn't like dentistry, or, you know, and also, Rich, another thing. When you and I were, I would say, when you and I were coming up, when we were growing up, pretty much, and like even our parents' generation, people pretty much had a job and they did that job their entire lives, and that's the way it always was. But these days, especially with the younger people, and we talk about millennials a lot, it seems like people change not only jobs but careers many, many, many times. It just seems like that's the way it's going. And so, suppose this guy just decides one day, hey, you know, I did a few years of dentistry, I don't really love it, I want to get out and do something. I want to be like an IT person. I want to get something like that.
You can't. He can't do it. Hands are tied.
For life, yep. Basically,
it's funny because both of our sons, we each have a son and a daughter. Both of our sons are in the tech world in one way or another. And it seems like with them and their colleagues, the expectation is that they change companies from time to time.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not like the old day when, you know, you worked over at Bethlehem Steel until you're, you know, to your old, you retire and you get a pension. Yeah, you retired, you get a pension. And that's the way it was with our parents growing up, our grandparents, and probably even a lot of in our generation as well. But the younger generations, they're switching around a lot, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when you have a
although both of our sons now work for great companies, and I don't think they would even think about switching. So maybe once they find something they really like, they stay there.
My son, this is maybe his after like a couple startups. This may be his third or so job in
Silicon Valley. Right, so maybe it takes some time to find your feet.
Right, so like the first one or two or three, suppose he had like a tremendous loan and he had to stick with that first one, a startup or something for life. It worries me.
And let's face it, dentistry is tough work. It's not for everyone. Fortunately, we loved our practices and we talk to so many dentists who love their practices, but we also talk to so many who don't. And, you know, for some, a career move is a great idea. But if you're $500,000 in debt, how are you going to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I want to stress what you just said. I mean, dentistry, look, we've been in dentistry in the profession one way or another for a long, long, long time. Many years in our own practices, many more years in coaching and helping and speaking. So we've got our fingers on the pulse. Is that right? Fingers on the pulse? Is that
Your fingers on something.
We got our fingers on something. But we know dentistry. And look, dentistry is a great profession. It really is. But I'd be lying if I said it's for everybody. It's not for everybody. And if you go in with a $500,000 loan or $1 million loan, you can't get out.
Okay, here's a question for you. We are really lucky that we are from Maryland, and our state dental school, University of Maryland, is one of the best dental schools in the country. We're really lucky we both got in.
And got out. I'm lucky I got out.
Right. And the tuition in those days was low. These days it's not low, but it's nothing compared to these private schools. It seems like to an extent, some of these super private for-profit schools are almost predatory. Like
That's what the writer of this article thought. Exactly.
I mean, it's like somebody says, hey, I've got a great business idea. I'm going to open a dental school and I can charge $100,000 a year for this dental school. Well, to no fault of their own, it's not their responsibility to babysit you once you get out. It's their responsibility to train you well and give you a diploma. After that, they're out of the equation.
That part's totally true. Yeah. But let me ask you, Rich, when we were younger and going through dental school, I mean, and we even going through college, was there like even a such thing as student loans? Do you know anybody that like had a student loan in those days? Oh, or were there other ways to pay
for? Now you're bringing up our upper middle class upbringing. I mean, we were very fortunate that our parents paid for most of our tuition to college and dental school. And they were fortunate that we went to state schools. I don't know what they would have done if we had gotten into Georgetown Dental School, Ava Shalom, for example. I mean, I don't think they could have afforded it.
But did you know anybody? Okay, but in our dental school class, there are all types of. Did you know people that had loans?
I knew people in college that had loans. I knew people in college that were on some kind of work study program where they had to work in the cafeteria at University of Maryland. Sure.
Well, that's different. That part's different.
But they were doing it to pay back their loans.
Oh, to pay back their loans or to pay to it? Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
maybe to pay tuition. I don't know. I mean, the student loan program has existed for decades, if not more.
I don't know how long it's been around because I don't remember like anybody in my dental school class even talking about like they've got this huge student loan. I just never heard that at all.
Well, let's face it. How much was University of Maryland Dental School in those days? It was a few thousand per semester.
That's the thing.
If somebody had a student loan, they would have owed a really reasonable amount of money when they got out.
But is it all relative?
It's not all relative.
So in other words, the tuitions are going up way more than inflation, way more.
It's not even close. Yeah. And then when you compare our old state tuition to private school tuition, it's different league.
So what can we take out of this?
So what's the point? Let's just say that somebody says to you, I'm in college. I'm a second-year college student doing great in the sciences. I've got a 3.8. I've always loved going to my dentist. I'd like to help people. I'm good with my hands. I understand I'm going to be a boss, and I love all that stuff. I think dentistry is for me. What do you say to them? Yes, go for it, but only go if you get into a state school? Or I think the main thing is be prepared. Know exactly what you're facing. Get all the data done and know.
Well, shadow a dentist. Find a dentist that you like. Shadow them.
But I was even talking about the financial part of it.
Oh,
you need to know going in if and what you will owe and what the payback schedule looks like.
Well, number one, absolutely go to a school that's affordable. These real super expensive ones. Now that raises another question. Suppose you only get into one that's like $125,000 a year. I wouldn't go.
Right. I mean,
it's too much money.
The top state schools are so competitive these days. It's unbelievable.
So I would do that. Definitely get into a state school, something that's reasonable tuition. And I got to be honest with you. I would not take out a loan. I would somehow find a way, whether if it means working for a couple years before you go back to school or getting up, hopefully maybe you have a parent or parents that can help you out a little bit in some way. But taking out a student loan to me is very, very scary.
Yeah, I mean, dental school is so demanding that you certainly can't have a full-time job. I mean, you can have a part-time job when you're in dental school, but it's not even going to come close to covering your tuition and your expenses.
So
live as cheaply as possible, live at home, live in someone's basement.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope that helps. I mean, because I know there are a lot of people out there. We have a lot of not only dentists and team members, but we have dental students listening to this and aspiring dental students. We do. So, you know, if you're listening to this, and especially I encourage you to go over to the dental place and see what people are talking about. It was a huge conversation about about a lot of stuff. But that one poor guy who is
basically
a freshman in dental school, second guessing and thinking, should I have done this? No, this might be a mistake. And drop out. And I owe $500,000. Thank you.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's scary.
And I would encourage all our dentists who are listening to try to become involved in your community. Reach out, see if you can help dental students, get them to shadow in your practice, take them out to lunch, have a heart-to-heart talk with them about what it's like being a dentist, and you better know this is right for you before you apply. Even talk money, what the what their financial expectations should be. The more informed that a dental student is, the better off they are, obviously.
Good stuff.
Excellent.
How about if we do the phone call?
Let's do it. Call of the day.
Doctor's office.
Hi, got a quick question for you. I've not been to your office before, but I know I need like a checkup and a cleaning and all that stuff. It's been a couple years since I've seen a dentist. But do you think I'll need x-rays also?
I have no idea. If you haven't been to a dentist in years, you probably should have them.
Mm-hmm. I'm asking because I'm a little leery of x-rays. I'm kind of worried about radiation and radiation exposure and that kind of stuff. I mean,
you don't have to have them if you don't want, but if there's a problem, they help in finding it.
Okay, so if I'm not having any pain or anything like that, I won't need x-rays. That'll be my choice.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for the information. That's exactly
You're
what
welcome.
I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Wow.
That's great. I wonder what else I won't need if I go.
Did I hear that right?
I also want to find an orthopedist that doesn't use x-rays. If the patient chooses, I'm going to recommend an MRI for this back problem you're having. But if you don't want it, you don't need it. Your choice.
What, is this like 1963?
I think it is, because remember how she answered the phone?
Doctor's office.
Dentist office.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Now, I can't remember. How did you start off? Did you say that you need
Well, first I told them I'm a new patient.
Right.
I've not been there before.
Right.
And I know I'm overdue for a checkup and a cleaning.
Right.
But will I need x-rays?
Right. That's right. You didn't say that you need a treatment. But,
no, I didn't
but that's
go
enough
that route.
But that's
right.
enough still. Wow. What is she thinking?
I know you hear a lot of these legal terms like standard of care, and we're not here to define what that means. I'm not sure I could even give a medico-legal definition of that. But to me, it seems that to tell somebody that has, and remember, if the patient says they haven't been seen a dentist in a couple of years, it's probably been 5 to 10 years.
Oh, yeah, at least.
And to just tell them they can come in and make the call that they don't want x-rays? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now,
I wonder if the doctor would have defended
but
that.
But here's the thing. Taking the benefit of the doubt. I mean, do you think maybe that was one of her ways to get you to make an appointment, and then once you're there, they'll try to educate and explain that you do need x-rays?
I think you're giving her a lot more credit than she deserves.
Well, I'm not giving her too much because she didn't even try to make the appointment. That's the thing. So it's not like that was her technique because she didn't say,
not her technique.
She didn't say, come on, let's get you in.
And if so, that would have been a bait and switch, which nobody likes.
True. Yeah, you gotta be forthright.
I mean,
you have to.
Okay. So what do you say? Well, I need x-rays. Well, I think she could have said the doctor would prefer to take x-rays so he can diagnose any dental problems you're having. Dental problems don't always produce pain. Sometimes they're hidden. It's always best to catch them early. Just anything kind of reassuring like that. And also, let the patient know that dental x-rays aren't like what they used to be. There's very little radiation or danger. And if they have any questions, the doctor will be glad to discuss it with them. Just anything. I'm saying your choice.
Your choice. Do I need an amalgam or composite?
Well, your choice.
But you know, but suppose there's a patient that calls on the phone that says, I'm anti-x-rays. I'm going to refuse them. Do you let them become a patient in your practice? Are you setting yourself up for like medical legal problems there?
I think these days I would not want to treat a patient that refuses any kind of diagnostic procedure, including x-rays.
Yeah, because in the old days you could kind of have them sign that waiver saying, I understand, but I think a good lawyer...
I could
lawyer,
just see you in court. Yeah,
exactly.
Doctor, I don't care what they sign. You're the expert.
Exactly
treated this patient with x-rays and now they're losing this tooth due to periodontal disease.
I wouldn't do it.
You're done.
You're fried
in court.
Great call. What do you give them?
F-. Bad answer and didn't go for the appointment.
I second that. F minus plus the way they answer the phone. Horrible.
F minus minus.
Horrible. So anyway, hey guys, till next time. This was episode 20. I think it was 20. Yeah, it was episode 20. Number 20. We're really getting there. Till next time, I'm Dr. David Maddow.
Dr. Richard Maddow, thanks so much for joining us on the Dental Practice Fixers. We'll see you soon.